Turn on the blue light. There we go.
The house vet.
Really? All right. The House Committee on Veterans and Preparedness, April 27, 2007, is in call to order. It's been a busy day. People are going to be running right and left. Before we do that, I'd like to bring focus on two pieces of information that are of note to the committee. Yesterday, Wednesday, April 26, 2017, Navy Ensign Verdi Cederstrom was buried at Arlington National Cemetery. He graduated from Salem High School. That's not North Salem, that's Salem High School in 1935, and the University of Oregon in 1940. He was killed during the attack on Pearl Harbor. He was 25 at that time, but his remains were not identified until 75 years later through DNA and dental records late last year. He was commissioned as an ensign in the Supply Corps of the U.S. Naval Reserve in January 1941. He was called to active duty in March of 1941. After instruction at the Naval Finance and Supply School in Philadelphia, he reported for duty on the USS Oklahoma in late August 1941. He was the ship's paymaster, probably very popular, I assume. He is believed to have been working on payroll the morning of attack on Pearl Harbor. Many crew members of the Oklahoma, which had over 1,300 sailors and Marines, jumped overboard when the ship was hit by multiple torpedoes, causing the ship to roll over. Hundreds were trapped below decks, including Cederstrom. His family held out hope. He had gone ashore to visit friends who played on the Willamette University football team, which was in Honolulu for games. The National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific has been the resting place for most of the 429 sailors and Marines who were killed aboard the USS Oklahoma during the attack on Pearl Harbor, including Ensign Cederstrom. A team of anthropologists, dental experts, and technicians from the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency is helping to bring closure to many families. Some of you may have read about this in the paper. He is a local boy. Even though he perished in a battle 75 years ago, we try very hard to remember. I say that because yesterday also, two United States troops, unknown yet if they were from Oregon, but two United States troops were killed in Afghanistan. We are still a nation at war. It's our job to make sure that people like Ensign Cederstrom recognize that we are continuing to try to keep faith with their sacrifice. So, today, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to open up an informational hearing on student veteran centers, veteran support services. Then we have about three public hearings for bills. My hope is that we have the public hearings today and that we actually work the bills next Thursday would be my preference. There's an amendment that might be necessary for one. So I'm going to open up the informational hearing with invited testimony from Ms. Justine Carpenter and Willie Elfering. Please come forward. And as you come forward, please state your name, what you represent, and take it away.
Mr. Chair, I'm Willie Elfering. I'm the Military and Veteran Resource Advisor at Oregon State University.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Justine Carpenter. I work at the University of Oregon as the Director of Non-Traditional Student Programs.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So what we'd like to do today is try and give you an overview of current services throughout the seven public universities in Oregon. And if money were to be supplied to the universities, how each university would like to apply that to its services for veterans. Mm-hmm. So currently, throughout the Oregon University system, we're serving over 3,800 student veterans and eligible family members. And I'd like to say that that's a fuzzy number because those who are receiving benefits are the easiest to capture. Those members who are paying on their own, it's up to them to self-identify. So I truly believe we have many more veterans out there using the system than that, but we can't really give you that number. So this is what we feel really is the baseline service to provide at each campus is a full-time person to be there to help them deal with issues, to find out what benefits they have and how to use them, and connect them with the resources. Further down the road, of course, as money is allowed, being able to provide a one-stop shop where they can go mm-hmm. and connect with all those services in one place instead of having to go to three or four different places on campus, of course, would be ideal. But I think we may have one that may be there now, but the rest of us are pretty far from that.
So having a full-time dedicated veteran service support person is really critical in providing the essential services as needed for veterans on campus. We're not all there at the moment. It's critical for a few reasons. This person is someone who can interact with the veterans on a daily basis. Anyone coming in may get assistance getting connected to services. Sometimes those services are very crucial in terms of housing. We have student veterans who may be living in their cars, sleeping in their cars, and need connection to local services. On-campus resources as well, academic advisors, things like that. Currently, we have a lot of students who are working to keep our centers open during the bulk of business hours to make sure that the centers, if we have a center, or those services are provided throughout the day. However, while that's helpful, a student worker really isn't providing the crucial time to provide extended services, long-term goals, consistency, looking at retention for student veterans to stay there, mm-hmm. and that can really help them with that transition into the university as they're leaving the military. To do that, we need a full-time person there, including over the summer, when a lot of the planning happens.
Mm-hmm. And even if we have that one person, if there were the availability to go beyond that, to be able to focus on the academic needs, really, of the students that are there, how they're doing, how we can improve that experience for them, would be a great place for us to use that money. We have a stack of slides for you.
Good.
That covers all the universities. Since we only represent two, we're not going to go into depth on them, if you don't mind.
Well, actually, Western Oregon University's
second to SOU.
Well, yeah. wasn't expecting that one. Western Oregon University's veterans coordinator met with me earlier today, and he's actually at a conference for student veterans, and very sad that he was not able to be here today. But I know from firsthand experience that PSU has an active program. Western Oregon has an active program. Several community colleges have active programs. So I believe you're representing more than just two today. And the goal today is to really have a better understanding of what we could do. My hope at some point, just laying it out there, is I don't believe we're going to be able to fund everything Mr. Mills put forward in his plan, but perhaps a formula approach that would try to help ensure that at least a baseline is available at every college. So we look forward to hearing and seeing what you actually do provide, so we have a better idea of what's going on, so we can advocate. So please continue.
Right. And
thank you.
At this time, we don't have that formula to give you either, but we definitely like to be a part of helping
Absolutely.
Get to that. I do want to point out that there are some similarities between the expansion plans of all the universities. Mm-hmm. If we are able to secure a funding stream that annually returns, everybody wants people, because that's what makes a difference for our student veterans. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that on one-time dollars. If we're unsuccessful in securing annual, then you'll see that everybody's looking at things, at renewing the computer resources or vet centers that they have to make them nice and last longer for the veterans. These are the current services for Eastern Oregon.
You can see they have 233 veterans listed here and only a half-time veteran resource coordinator. Some as well, 0.6 certifying officer, and then I believe they may be supplementing as well with students, although it doesn't say that.
If anyone has any questions, we'll stop right in the middle of it and get the question answered, because they're going to proceed with their program.
And as you'll see as we go along, not everybody identifies how many certifying officials they have. And I think really the point is our certifying officials have a regulatory requirement that the VA gives them for these students. They're pretty busy at that. And really, they can't dual hat effectively for those students. They need to focus on that, and you need somebody to advocate separately. As we talked about, given the opportunity to expand their program, they would increase both those positions to full-time. If it's just a one-time dollar amount, they look at updating computers and renovating their center. Oregon State University. All right. So currently, it's myself as the full-time advisor. We've got over 1,200 student veterans and family members that we take care of, which is stretched between Corvallis, Newport, Bend, and our eCampus students globally. So it keeps us rather busy. If we were able to, we've got Cascades. Cascades, we were lucky. We just were able to hire on a 0.45 position there who is currently training and will also help to facilitate financial aid for the students there. They only have 81 students, but at the current time, that puts them at 8% of the student body. So it's a significant little chunk.
I have a question. If we're going to expand these programs, if there's only so many people in college that are veterans, how do you expect to expand the programs? How are you going to outreach to more people if there's only a certain number at school?
Well, so if I take where you're going, right, a part of my position isn't recruitment and outreach at all. They find us. They're out there
just to have a presence on campus.
Yes, a good part of my position is dealing with prospective students because they want to know, how do I get to the university? How do I use my benefits? What benefits are best for me? How do I give them to my son or my daughter? That we have a lot of interaction with people outside the university without working at it. They reach out to us in that manner.
Now, do you feel that you have a substantial number of students that are in the student body that are veterans that aren't aware of their benefits, and that's what you're going to try to be picking up on?
To some point, and like I stated on the previous slide, one of the places I personally would like to take it is be able to invest some time and see how we can help them academically. Most of them are non-traditional students, which universities are geared for. They don't live on campus, so they're commuter students, and they could have been out of high school from anywhere from 2 to 25 years. So they have a significant road ahead of them compared to a 17-year-old coming out of high school.
Thank you.
Okay. Given that we have an opportunity to increase funding for our programs, we would increase our Bend campus to a full-time position. And as I was speaking, we would bring on an academic counselor to help us make that next step for our student veterans and be able to analyze where those gaps are in our service to make them successful. Given a one-time funding, we would look at replacing aging computers and resources that they will use on campus in between classes to maximize their time.
Question? Back on your previous slide, what's that second bullet, the Cognito Interactive Training Program? What is that?
Cognito is a company that produces the interactive training, and there's they produce it for veterans at risk at a peer level that talks that so any of the students on campus could log on to that site and learn more how to deal with veterans and other veterans in crisis. They do a part of training where a faculty or staff member can log on and see that point of view on dealing with student veterans. They also have various versions for the LGBTQ community and like, but we were focusing on if we could be able to provide that to the university to let everybody kind of basically self-teach faculty, staff to students.
Thank you.
Oregon Tech, currently they don't have any FTE other than their certifying officials at the locations. They're doing both jobs.
This is where it does really become critical to have someone that's just dedicated to providing veteran support, because they are so busy trying to certify the veterans for their benefits that they're often, you know, also don't have time to provide the essential services that would help with student veteran retention to keep them there through graduation.
As we see, of course, what they're asking for, if able to be funded, would be those full-time positions in addition to their certifying officials. Portland State University, they're one of the lucky ones at this point. They currently have two FTE, full-time equivalents, serving their veterans.
And a dedicated Veteran Resource Center as well.
Yep. And again, given that they could get additional funding, they would look at adding one more person to assist in that effort, or one-time funding to work on their study resource center. And actually, it looks like scholarship funding.
So now we go to Southern, that has around just over 200 student veterans and at a 0.6 FTE for veteran resource coordinator. Again, not enough to really take on the full-time bulk of the work. And they also supplement with student veteran employees, which, like I said, is what we tend to do to make it work. They share a space with the Commuter Resource Center, and they don't have a dedicated veteran space to themselves. Which you can see an expansion is something that they would look to have. For ongoing funding, they would definitely increase that to a 1 FTE for the Veteran Resource Coordinator, and then add additional students to help them with that, provide training, outreach, and education to the campus community, and increase the recruitment if they can. You can see the one-time funding would be to help with the space, to help them dedicate a space strictly for student veterans that they would not have to share. And then we come to the University of Oregon. We have, depending on the time of year, this is listing at about 400 students that we're serving that are receiving Veterans Affairs benefits, the VA benefits. Again, as we stated earlier, this does not count all of the veterans that come that are either running out of VA benefits or that we're not seeing on benefits that are coming later. Currently, this is staffed. We staff with myself. I'm the director of non-traditional student program, so I serve student veterans, student parents, older students, transfer students. So there's a lot in my umbrella. And
sorry, excuse me,
yes.
Representative Vestal has a question.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, how many students are at the University of Oregon?
Oh, God.
You only have 397 out of how many students?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is the percentage. It's actually on the other slide. The numbers they gave us to report on for that right here.
Wow.
Who was on the very first slide?
Yeah, it's on the one that has the percentage.
Well, it's okay.
If you could perhaps...
I do have it, Mr. Chair. Just
if you can get it to us afterwards, I'd be even fine.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, or now is good
it.
As well.
We have it. There it is. So the number that they're looking at is 1.8% of the student population at the University of Oregon, 23,634 students, and about 427 student veteran enrollment. So 1.8% of the population of students would be student veterans.
Well, but you say you have 23,000, but you only have 397 veteran students. That's not 1%.
397. Yeah, plus the students that are family members as well. So family members using veterans benefits. And that they're looking at 427 with those numbers. So the numbers vary year to year. There's a snapshot you can take on any particular day that I could tell you how many veterans would be on campus that day, but it doesn't give you the full number of how many were there throughout the year since they're graduating at different times of the year.
And that count is by those that are using the GI Bill or by those that are self-selecting as veteran?
These numbers are on the GI Bill.
Because some are probably attending that may not be on the GI Bill.
Absolutely.
Well.
We do have probably. Members that are not on the GI Bill as well.
It's a snapshot of a larger picture.
Mm-hmm. It's a set. So we're trying to get those numbers to be more incongruent with each other. A few years ago, we did add the question so they can self-select, but we don't have that. It hasn't been a full 4 years, so because of that, we don't have the data. So we do go with the VA benefits that we're on. So let's see. So as I said, we staff with myself at not my full-time part of my job. Then we have a graduate employee who we house in the vet center at 0.49 about half of the time, and we supplement that with student workers. Again, it's great because it lets us keep it open, but it does not help us for planning throughout the year for those efforts that we want to do, such as the welcome, the orientation in the fall. If we had the ongoing expansion, we would definitely increase that so that we would have one dedicated person whose job it was to just serve veterans, that would be on their radar 24/7 when they're coming in. So that is essentially what we would need. Without the ongoing expansion with the one-time funding, we would look at, as we said, expanding our programs. To us, that means providing more services. So providing them with ongoing tutoring, a veteran advisor that's solely trained to help them kind of get through the academic process and help them with their academic plan. Also helping supplement our peer advisors. We have a peer advisors program on our campus that pairs an incoming student veteran to a student veteran who's been there a year or more. And so those are volunteers.
Question?
Well, are you finished with the Oregon?
Those are volunteers. We just like to help support them in any way we can to encourage them to continue. So we would help find ways to make it worth their while to be an advisor.
I didn't want to interrupt her.
Ms. Chair, I just want to help Vice Chair Esquivel with where he was going. This Saturday is the spring football game, and we're giving our jerseys to military. We're the only school that does that in Oregon at a football game. And so I'm very proud of being a multi-decade season ticket holder at Autzen, and we'll be wearing those jerseys on the field and giving them to veterans, honoring veterans on the field. So I just want to point that out. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
They don't do it at that other school.
Well, we at Southern Oregon University gave our championship jerseys away.
To veterans?
And football players at Western Oregon University are actually part of the OSU ROTC and serve in the military.
Okay.
Proceed.
I would like to also state that because of the generosity of the football team, we have football jerseys hanging up in our Veterans Center that were given to our student veterans. The student veterans wanted to share them with all student veterans, so we have them framed and proudly displayed.
You can admit that that's pretty cool.
Student
that's
Veterans Center. Cool.
I have to give Representative Post kudos for that.
There you go.
I
have to give him one up on that one.
All right. And you're welcome to come. There'll be 30,000 plus fans there. So
there you go. There's the best.
Oh, looky, Western.
As you probably discussed with
The representative earlier today, here's Western Oregon, Mr. Yep. Chair. They also have one FTE to take care of the rousing 135 student veterans and family members.
They're a mighty 135.
Roger.
Wolves.
If given the opportunity, they would like to expand by 3 FTE to better serve their veterans.
Mm-hmm.
If it is limited to a one-time funding, they too would renovate their existing resource center and help their expand their current programs.
Okay.
If there are any questions for us, we would be happy to answer, sir.
Any questions? Good.
So I just have to ask, so most of those where I saw the potential one-time investment or some of the others, so many of them talk about computers. So I assume those are computer. It's a resource center, but I'm trying to understand, don't all students in college, do they have a computer?
Have a computer themselves?
Yeah.
Not all students. Not all of our students do. Sorry.
That's all right.
We have many students who come in to use our printing, especially. We provide printing services them for free. And other parts of the university where they're going to print, they do. That gets charged to their account. So we definitely provide for that as well. Not all of students do have laptops. Many do. You're correct, but not all.
And like I stated earlier, our populations are commuter students. None of them live on campus. So they try to maximize their time on campus as much as they can. So in between classes is when they're utilizing those computers to work on their coursework.
Thank you.
Other questions? Well, what we're going to do next is we're going to actually end the informational hearing, but you're welcome to stay because we're going to actually be talking about Senate Bill 143 in a little bit. We're going to invite at that point the community college folks. They happen to be here. And perhaps talk about an amendment. So you're welcome to stay, but I'm going to close the informational hearing, and we're going to move to the next bill. All right?
Thank you. Thank you.
Informational hearing is closed. We're going to move to Senate Bill 79, opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 79. Mr. Volk.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 79 makes explicit that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs may file an affidavit describing its exempt status in foreclosure processes in lieu of documentation showing compliance with foreclosure mediation requirements, becomes operative 91 days after effective date, declares an emergency. In 2013, the Legislative Assembly enacted Senate Bill 558 to govern the Operation Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program. This legislation has been effective since August 4, 2013. The program uses a neutral and trained third party, otherwise referred to as a facilitator, to conduct a face-to-face meeting dispute resolution conference between the homeowner, referred to as the grantor, and the lender, sometimes referred to as the beneficiary. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is considered a lender because it administers a home loan program for eligible veterans that is an additional and distinctly separate benefit from the federal VA loan program. ODVA has administered its program since 1946, and it owns and services all of its loans. Currently, ODVA is required by statute to make every reasonable attempt to keep a veteran in the home purchased. This is a higher standard than the required by the mediation program, and ODVA has a lower foreclosure rate than the overall housing market. For those reasons, the Legislative Assembly passed Senate Bill 252 in 2015 to exempt ODVA from the foreclosure mediation requirement applicable to traditional lenders. Senate Bill 79 permits ODVA to file an affidavit describing its exempt status in foreclosure processes in lieu of documents showing compliance with mediation. This has gone through the Senate. The ayes were 29, the excused one. There was no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
I have a question.
Yeah, question, go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for counsel. When I pulled this up earlier, and then you just read it, I don't think I've ever seen this. Becomes operative 91 days after effective date of act, declares emergency effective on passage. I've never seen those two together like that. What, can you explain that?
Usually it's one or the other.
New math?
I guess.
We will research that. I have no idea.
You take a look here.
Well, and you don't have to do it today. But yeah. Have you seen that before?
I don't think so. Before. If I have, I didn't recognize it.
No. Sometimes these bills came as a result of a late evening, so.
That's a good point. It says it right on the heading of the bill. So. Mm-hmm.
Usually it's one or the other. It can't be both.
We will ask Legislative Council.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll have Legislative Council explain that. Thank you for bringing that up, Representative.
Yeah.
We would invite Ms. Lori Skillman and friend up to the podium, as long as she explains who the friend is.
Mr. Keno.
Mine doesn't say that. Mine just says an emergency.
Come on, go in. Good. Good afternoon. Is this on?
Yep.
Sorry. I didn't mean to shout. Good afternoon, Chair Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And with me is Keno, who's part of our Prison Puppy Program at Eastern Oregon Correctional Institute.
Welcome, Keno.
Senate Bill 79 is a technical fix to a bill that ODVA actually sponsored in 2015. We got, as counsel advised, the purpose of that bill was to provide Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs with an exemption to the foreclosure mediation program that's effective for all lenders because we have this robust loan program. One of the reasons that we were able to request and get that exemption was because what we are required to do in statute, what the legislature has already required us to do for many, many years, goes way above and beyond any foreclosure mediation program. We are actually required to use our very best efforts to keep veterans in their homes as long as possible. So we got this exemption. However, because it's a technical piece of the statute, one of the things is that lenders are required to file in the county deed records documents showing that they had gone through the foreclosure mediation program and so on. Well, if we're exempt, we can't file those documents. So right now we're in kind of this catch-22, which is an important military word. And it...
good book, too.
It's a great book, too. And so the Attorney General's office called this to our attention and said, here's some language to fix that. So we're asking for this amendment to those statutes. And instead of filing a document that we can't file, we do want the public to know. And if you are in the title business, in the real estate business, it's important to be able to have some sort of documents on record. So we said, let's do file something. Can we file an affidavit that says they didn't go? It did get foreclosed on, but we aren't filing these documents because we're exempt from that. So it's a very technical little fix to a bill, but I'd sure appreciate you supporting this. Thank you. Any questions? I'm happy
to
answer.
Members of the committee, any questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Why don't you give some background, if you would, please, on why you were exempt?
Why we are exempt? If you...
I know why, but I mean, maybe the rest of it. Because I think we discussed this, right, maybe 6-8 years ago?
In 2015, when we asked for this exemption.
It seems like 10 years.
It seemed like 10 years ago.
I won't go there. Let's see. The purpose of the foreclosure mediation program, just in general for all lenders, is that when is to protect the consumers, basically, from sort of unnecessary roughness. I don't know how else to describe that, on the part of the lenders, just coming in and foreclosing on them. Because we went through that huge foreclosure period in this country, about, you know, 6 years ago. And so what the foreclosure mediation program does is say, if you want to foreclose on someone, you have to, and the other reason is because loans are not serviced and sold by the same people. You know, you get a loan and then suddenly your servicer is one person. My servicer on my loan just changed 2 months ago. So your servicer always changes. You don't deal with the bank like you used to and go in and talk to them. You know, you call some 800 number to talk about your possibility of foreclosure or fixing things. And so there's this real disconnect between the person who holds the note and the consumer. So they said, if you want to foreclose on someone, you can't just file a bunch of paperwork. You need to give that person an opportunity to sit down face-to-face and have a mediator present and talk about, are there steps that the lender and the borrower can take to resolve that and to avoid foreclosure? And that's why it's called a foreclosure avoidance mediation program. If you look at our statutes on our home loan program, it actually has about 10 or 15 sentences saying the Oregon State Legislature's intent. And you hardly ever see the words intent in our statutes. It's the intent of the legislature that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs shall do everything they can do to keep that veteran in their home. Our foreclosure rate is tiny. It's minuscule compared to lenders. We go above and beyond working with our veterans. And one of the reasons we can do that is because we lend and service the loan. So we are one and the same.
If I could, to that point,
yes,
that's one of the reasons that when we hopefully next session get the refinancing bill the right way, it's that same level of effort and energy to keep vets in their home that we want to actually have in that refinancing option.
Excellent.
Because you have that reputation. Please continue.
Yeah. So just because our standards and our requirements are so much higher than the standards for other lenders, if you just kind of compared them, we ask for that exemption because we file so many steps. And if we were then to go through everything that we had plus then start that foreclosure avoidance mediation program, it's just kind of unwieldy.
Representative Esquivel?
I believe Tom Mann pitched it.
No, we did.
Was it you?
2 years ago. Yes, sir.
I thought it was Tom.
Yes,
but
sir.
But anyway, what it amounts to is the difference between ODVA lending and a commercial lender is that ODVA very adamantly works with the individual to make sure that they don't lose that house.
Yep.
And, I mean, they do a great job with it.
Thank you. Thank you for the history as well.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions on this particular measure? What I'd like to do, we're going to check this LC thing out.
Yes.
And if we need to amend it, we will. But my intent is to try to move it on next week, next Thursday.
Very good.
Okay. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 79. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 143. And what I'd like to do while Mr. Volk is explaining this, I'd like to invite up Mr. R.B. Green and Jay Hernandy, as well as Mr. Tom Love from Western Oregon University.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 143A requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to advise the Legislative Assembly by February 1, 2018 on the merits of appropriating general fund dollars to ODVA in support of veteran resource centers and coordinators currently on college campuses and whether to establish additional centers and or coordinators. Sunsets January 2, 2019, takes effect 91st day after Sunday. Transitioning from military to civilian life can sometimes present unique challenges for veterans. Supporting veterans' educational employment goals are two ways the transition can be made easier. Both federal and state educational benefits for veterans encourage enrollment in public universities and community college
that veterans are typically atypical in many ways. They are often older than their peers, often with families, and often hold a certain perspective that only comes from having served in the armed forces. On-campus resource centers are tailored to help veterans succeed, connect to other veterans, and ground them with the broader collegiate environment. Senate Bill 143A directs the ODVA Advisory Committee to make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly by February 1, 2018 on the merits of appropriating general fund dollars to ODVA to support veteran resource centers and coordinators currently on college campuses, and whether to establish additional centers or coordinators. This has gone through the Senate. The Senate vote was 29 ayes, one excused. The fiscal is minimal expenditure, and the revenue is no revenue impact.
Okay, before we begin, Representative Post, I understand you need to leave around 4 o'clock. I want to make sure you know we're not going to be working any bills today, so we'll take good notes and make sure that you're filled in what you have to miss.
Okay.
Earlier, we had a conversation in broad terms of what student vet centers do at college campuses, and we went by a play-by-play of at the universities. And Mr. Love, the Western Oregon University slide was up there. We talked a little bit about that. What I'd appreciate, kind of the focus of your comments on this bill right now, is the bill right now is that there needs to be a study. And quite frankly, I'm hoping to do a little more than a study with an amendment. But if we could hear what's going on at Clackamas and what you could do with a little extra money, that would be helpful. And then I know, Mr. Love, you had some comments just from Western's perspective you might want to add. Just so everybody's clear, what I'm hoping to be able to do at the end of today is appoint a work group to look at an amendment that we could possibly bring in that is based on a similar structure to the County Veteran Service Officer formula, where colleges and universities that put some money in the game basically leverage resources. That's the goal. We may end up with just a study, understand that, but if we can get a little farther than that, we'd certainly like to try. So with having said all of that, please introduce yourself and tell us about Clackamas Community College.
Chair Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, members of the committee. My name is R.B. Green. I'm the Veteran Services Coordinator at Clackamas Community College in Oregon City. I'm also a 20-year veteran, and I'm here today again to speak in support of the Senate bill and to talk a little bit about which some of the more specifics that we do to try to create student success. First of all, I wanted to thank everybody on this committee for everything you do in support of veterans. I wasn't too familiar with it before coming down here the last couple times, and it's awesome. Thank you very much. One thing I can tell you about our Veterans Education and Training Center is our focus is on supporting students. We kind of get a wider variety than maybe a four-year school in that a lot of the students like myself who weren't that well prepared for college coming out of high school end up at a community college and need a little more assistance getting started. But we're well-manned compared to many of our peers in that we do have one full-time veteran services coordinator who also myself, I also do certifying duties, certifying official duties, which are cumbersome and time-consuming.
And sir, just for the clarification, certifying not on the veteran service officer side of the house, but certifying as far as for financial aid and
educational services, yes, sir, through the VA.
Make sure.
And there's a whole another 12 inches of compliance regulations that we have to follow and
Right. And try
to do. But in addition, I have a certifying official who's also full-time, and she and I both take part in customer service activities and student outreach, as well as more than anything, trying to personalize our support given the various circumstances of individual students. So getting back to Vice Chair Esquivel's question about how to expand, that's something I think would be great in terms of a study, but certainly I can say right out the gate that we would be much more focused on student success and getting individuals successful versus putting out fires, dealing with debt issues and other kinds of problems that interfere with individual student success. And then also there's a lot of outreach that needs to be done to the veterans in our county. For example, we have 34,000 veterans, and we have maybe 230 or so that are actually drawing benefits. So there's a lot of people out there who have benefits who are not utilizing them, so, and may not know how to use them. So there's a lot of that population that we're missing out on. the main thing, my purpose on campus is to make students feel connected, know that they're supported, and that normally gives them a better chance at success. And we've had many successes, and that's why today I brought with me one of our student veterans by the name of Jay Hernandez. So Jay, without further ado.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Jay Hernandez. I'm a student veteran advocate at Clackamas Community College. I'm a first-generation American and a four-and-a-half-year Marine Corps vet. And I'm here today to strongly support Senate Bill 143. The Veteran Resource Center at Clackamas Community College has helped me succeed by giving me the assistance I've needed to navigate the sometimes frustrating VA and college systems. Systems that I've had no prior experience with. Assistance that has included a life and career options program, which is developed to help me professionally and academically succeed in the college and or workforce. In addition, I was able to find support through the community center or the Veterans Community Center at CCC. From using the center as a student to now mentoring students as a student veteran advocate, the center has helped me succeed academically, socially, and professionally. I will graduate in 2 months with an expected 3.2 GPA, and I've been accepted into Merrillhurst University for the business management program. This large step towards entrepreneurship is a direct result of my experience at Clackamas Community College, as well as the support that I've received from the Veterans Center and its staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. Mr. Love.
Chair Evans and members of the committee, thank you for your time today and service to our state. My name is Tommy Love. I'm the Executive Director of Advancement and the Western Oregon University Foundation. Although not a veteran myself, having grown up in the state of North Carolina and for many, many years living near Fort Bragg, I am very, very familiar with what our military branches do, not only for our safety worldwide, but also the impact they have on us and our own communities. Western Oregon University is known and has been recognized for being military friendly, and also because of the long relationship with the Oregon Military Academy on campus. What I would like to kind of testify to is the importance of the military in our community. They bring leadership skills, and everything else that they've learned in the battlefield, they now bring back to our communities, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's student leadership on campus, or whether it's being ready in terms of a natural disaster and coming back together as being leaders on our campus. And it's in this regard, I would applaud the look for a study to how can we better serve those students once they come back, those veterans, once they come back in our communities, and doing everything we can to support them and their educational efforts. As I mentioned, Western is recognized as being military friendly, and part of that too is that our veteran service is located in our student center. The sad thing about that is although many, many strides have been made because of Western's commitment to our veterans, there's still so much more that we can do as a part of this progress and their growth. A couple of highlights that I would like to point out is the relationship between the Vice President for Student Affairs and also the Vice President for Academic Affairs and our Provost, and their continued commitment to do everything they can to work with those students to make sure that they are able to maintain their service. We recently were discussing and moving forward policies that actually will give more latitude on the academic side, so when our students who are currently serving can actually go out and make sure that they're meeting their requirements of service. But the other piece is the Wolf Connection system on our campus, which actually is an early detection system. And another leadership of that is Jesse Poole, who runs that program, is also a veteran himself. And I think that really illustrates Western's commitment to this. And the thing that I would leave you with is although Western Oregon University has made great strides in being military friendly and honoring those veterans, there is so much more that we can do, and everything that we can do to study this and look at it is needed.
Thank you. Thank you all. Questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you. And I should have maybe asked the other people that spoke this question, but I'm trying to understand. So how is your position, say, at Clackamas in that? How is the position of the services provided for veterans financed, paid for?
My position comes out of the student services budget, so it's not externally financed, sir.
I suppose that's on many campuses, that's the way it is.
I believe it's a mix between auxiliary fees, student fees or student activity fees, and in some cases, I know Western, for example, their general fund they actually put a side of that for salary for the.
So are we? Is anybody aware? Are there positions on campus? And it goes back to one of the positions they talked about was. I don't remember exactly what it was, but a different type of position. Are there any positions that the federal VA pays for that would be on campuses?
Only student positions, sir. There's also sometimes campuses are augmented. We do not have this, but it's called a VSOC or Veteran Services Officer on campus. Mm-hmm. Those are generally come out of the voc rehab type of background. VA employees, though, paid for by the VA. The school just provides resources to office and so forth. Yes.
For a short time, the state of Oregon actually had campus veteran service officer paid for at general fund.
No, we did.
And then at Oregon State and a couple other Western, those positions rolled on to either auxiliary fee paid or student activity fee paid. Sure.
Thank you. Thanks.
I think every campus
has one, isn't it? We got close in the universities. If no other questions, thank you very much. We have a couple other folks that want to come up and contribute. Lewis Franklin, Gus Bedwell, and Lori Skillman. Gino has a friend. Gus, where's your dog?
Well, I left my friend in the back row next to Mitch.
He doesn't have any.
My son.
Sorry, Mitch. Whoever would like to start first, please go ahead.
Go ahead. And then I'll go. Okay, so I guess I'm supposed to introduce, this is Riley. So Chair Evans, Vice Chair Boone, Vice Chair Esquivel, and members of the committee. My name is, can you hear me okay? My name is Lewis Franklin. I have been teaching at Lynn Benton Community College for 16 years. To qualify myself a little bit about what's going on here and why we're testifying, I'm a two-time combat veteran. I'm a retired First Sergeant with the Oregon Army National Guard. I've used vocational rehab, voc rehab benefits. I've used post 9/11 GI Bill benefits. So I know a little bit about veterans and veterans issues. So that's one of the reasons I'm here. You folks have my formal testimony, which is two pages, and I'm not going to read it to you because you don't have a lot of time, and you don't want me to read something to you that you could probably read anyway. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and give you the condensed version of my testimony. I'm here because I'm the veterans advisor for the Lynn Benton Community College. At least I was. I've had to resign from that position. Lynn Benton has no 100% funded veteran coordinator or even certifying official on campus. So we have no position that's funded. We do have a Veterans Center. It was cobbled together through donations. The only thing the college ever really gave us out of that was the actual real estate that the Veterans Center is located in. It's a beautiful center. The veterans and local contractors did a marvelous job building that center. I want to be sure that you understand the way we set that center up was so that it wouldn't just be a campus resource. It was also set up to be a community resource. So that was one thing that the students made clear and we made clear as we were building that particular center. All right. I'm not going to get too into what I want to say is that I have seen it work. I have seen the dedicated centers and the dedicated staff centers work at Western Oregon State. I've seen them work at Oregon State. I didn't know that U of O had one, which is great. I had no idea that they had one. But I've seen them work. And this bill aims to support the smaller schools that cannot afford it. They don't have the general fund to go ahead and make a veterans coordinator happen. The veteran centers are a very, very necessary piece for the veterans. It's a safe place. It's a place where they can gather. It's a place where they can interact. It's a place where they can be reintegrated into the community. It's a place where they can bounce ideas off one another, to support one another. Which kind of brings me to my next point, which is since my testimony last time, April 4th, we lost one of our student veterans. He committed suicide, and I don't know if a staffed veteran center would have possibly caught that. But I'd like to think that maybe it would have. That's really all I have to say. Please read my testimony. It's very long, so I did not want to read it in verbatim to you. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, sir. Representative Lewis, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your testimony said there are about 300 veterans attending Lynn Benton.
Correct. Correct. The number is can be anywhere from 100 to 300, depending upon whether you're talking about beneficiaries who are also using those benefits, veterans who don't have access to benefits, and many veterans don't make use of their benefits. So generally, it's thought of that you take the number that you have using benefits and you multiply that by three, and that gives you about your student veteran population.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gus. Lori. Lori.
Chair Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. You have before you Senate Bill 143 as amended, and what I am going to speak to is Senate Bill 143 as introduced. It has sort of if you look at the amendment, it says that the advisory committee shall look at Senate Bill 143 as introduced and make recommendations about that. So I wanted to provide you with a couple of important pieces about that initial bill. First, what's the purpose of the bill? The purpose of the bill is to really help veterans on three difficult transition periods when they're going to a community college or a university. And the first is transitioning into campus life from military life. It's a dramatic difference, and the veterans are very different than most of the population of incoming students. They're older, typically married, have a couple of kids. They've had a job before because they've been in the military. So they come in differently, and they have they're on a mission. They have a purpose in going to school. My purpose in going to school as a college freshman was quite different than a veteran's purpose in going to school. They see that as a means to an end. They look at a certificate or a degree as a ticket for them to the next phase in their life. Military life is very structured. Campus life is not. I mean, there's just a whole lot of different kinds of transitions. So one is transitioning in. The second thing is to managing life as a student. Looking at all the benefits, looking at for example, veterans with PTSD being in a classroom of 300 and the noise and the this and then the other is a difficult place to be in. So sort of managing that. And then once you have your degree, once you have your certificate, then what? How do you transition to the community and employment? So this bill is to establish these veterans resource centers and coordinators, and they really help with these very difficult transitions. They also help with educating the faculty and staff at the community colleges and the universities about how a veteran is a different kind of student and what it is that they can do to help. You saw the slides about the universities. You heard a little bit about the community colleges. I'm going to consolidate that. And if you look at my testimony, which I'll get to, there's a whole lot of real hardcore information about each of those. But currently we have, if you're looking at the community colleges and universities that have a resource center that's established and a full-time coordinator, there are only five of them. Okay, there are some that have resource centers, no coordinators. There's Chequemeckan Community College has a veterans resource coordinator and no place to be. So it's kind of a mix. One of the other things that we often talk about from ODVA is our return on investment, which we talk a lot about with our county veteran service officers. You know, if you set up a county veteran service officers, what's your return on federal benefits? A couple of statistics. In 2015, Oregon veterans received from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs over $2.6 billion, with a B, 1 year, not a biennium, in federal benefits. Of that, almost $146 million was in federal VA education benefits. It's a lot of money coming in. I think one of the big things about that is if you have a strong campus program, and I looked at I assisted the good Senator Mona Sanderson in preparing this bill. And so I did a lot of research on campus veterans resource centers across the country and what they had. And boy, you can go to like a USC website and it's, we have a veterans resource center, we have resource coordinators, we are here, you're a veteran, come to our school. So there's a real attraction. And so if you have a solid program, the colleges and universities can do a lot to attract and retain students. And, you know, there's absolutely someone there who's going to pay that tuition bill, and that's the Fed VA. So it's good. One of the things that Lewis was talking about was, well, how do you figure out how many veterans are on campus? Because the only thing that we can really kind of quantify are veterans who are receiving federal VA benefits. So we have those numbers, and the way that I kind of computed it, I didn't do three times. I did 1.3 times. There could be three times. I think that's one of the things that would be beneficial if these programs get instituted. How do you do that? I took what Portland Community College has a pretty robust program. They have four campuses. They have a resource center on three of those campuses, two full-time and one part-time coordinator. So they have a pretty good campus. And what they said, here are the veterans that are getting benefits. Here are the veterans that we serve. It was about 1.3 times. So I just kind of did a guesstimate based on that. So if you do that, 5,870 veterans are getting federal VA benefits at state universities and community colleges. That's all we're talking about here. We're not talking about voc rehab. We're not talking about technical anything else, just the community colleges and universities. If you multiply that by a factor of 1.3, you have about 7,600 veterans in those campuses. So here's the status. Six state universities have resource centers. OSU, PSU, you went through those, University of Oregon.
Western Oregon
University. Southern Oregon University, very important, very important. Eastern Oregon. Three universities have full-time resource. Only three of those have full-time resource people. Three have a part-time coordinator. And OIT is the only university with no resource center or coordinator, although it looks like that's changed since I wrote this. At community colleges, you have 17 community colleges in Oregon. Two have centers and full-time coordinators. PCC has those, and Clackamas. Three community colleges have a veterans resource center only and no veteran coordinator, Central Oregon, Lane, and Lynn Benton. One community college has a full-time coordinator and no resources, that's Chemeketa, and nine have nothing. Okay, so What Senate, the way that Senate Bill was 143 was structured was it was a grant program. ODVA would administer the grants, work with all of the Veterans Resource Coordinators on implementing grants, setting up a new resource program, or expanding and enhancing an existing program. That was the purpose of the funds. So they would apply for those. Some, if you look at some of the stats on some of these universities, their numbers are so small, it may not be in their best interest to do that or try to staff that up. We also believe that, the community college or university had to have some skin in the game, just like our counties that we provide money to for CVSOs. So the only thing that we had in there was a campus veterans program coordinator. And the other thing that we really need is outcomes. What are the outcomes? How do you measure them? How do you, you know, make sure that, these grants were appropriately implemented? If you see my testimony, there are these lovely charts. And what I did on these was it has the university, the number of veterans that are certified, the number of veterans total, which is that approximate 1.3, whether they have a veteran center, whether they have a veterans coordinator, and then the notes. And the notes talk about, you know, what they have and what they do. Some of these are wonderful. They have a you were talking about computers. They have a lending program for computers. You can, you know, borrow a Mac from them. They do free printing. They do free parking. They have it's a gathering place. It is a safe place. And as you heard, a lot of these people don't live on campus. They don't live in the dorms. They're older. They're married. They have kids. So they live off campus somehow. The VA, the GI Bill doesn't pay for everything. It doesn't pay for summers, as you well know, sir. So I think that you'll find that pretty helpful. If you look at the very last page, the grand totals, how many resource centers are there? 12. How many? There are 7 full-time resource coordinators and 4 part-time. I just want to say 2 other quick things because I was listening to the testimony. A certifying official is not a resource coordinator. A certifying official is a person who works in the business department,
enrollment management,
and they are they have to go through training and be blessed by federal VA and to be able to certify. And what they're certifying is you're enrolled. You're a real veteran, and here are all the documents, and they submit that to the VA, and the VA pays the school directly. So those are certifying officials. Every school that is going to accept those kinds of funds has to have one. So we don't count those in what we want for
just
resource coordinators.
Clarification. They have to have one, but it may be their 4th or 5th job.
Right. Oh, that's correct.
Because at some institutions we found 5 years ago, it was on top of being the chief bottle washer, which
right.
Just an add-on job.
Right. But we want people to distinguish resource coordinators who are going to be there working with veterans and so on, and people who, you know, go through their paperwork and help them apply with FedVA. Those people are not always the people who necessarily understand, and you can explain this better than I can, whether you should take your GI Bill now. Wait, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages of when you use that. So the second thing is distinguishing the benefits. We're talking here about federal VA educational benefits. Our county veteran service officers deal with disability compensation and pension benefits. So these people, these resource coordinators, will not be doing that. However, we want to train them to work very closely with CVSOs so that these students get all of the other kinds of benefits, not just the educational benefits that they have earned. They talked about family members. For those people who are not familiar with military and VA educational benefits, as a veteran, you can give your educational benefits to your kids.
Under the new GI Bill.
Under the new GI Bill. And in Oregon, there are certain benefits that kids of veterans get that are a little bit different. And that's all I've got.
Gus, you've got 3 minutes.
Okay. Outstanding. Chair Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, and Vice Chair Boone, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gus Bedwell. I'm an Army vet, and I've spent probably about 16, 17 years in veterans advocacy work across three different agencies, and you know, the Employment Department, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and for those of you who love OSU, go Beavs. Before I get started on my testimony real quick, I just want to introduce my special guest. He's not as cuddly as the two underneath the table here, but he's just as important to me, and that is James Bedwell, my son in the back row.
Welcome.
He wanted to see what Dad does. So this is bring your kid to work day. So you know, just to kind of narrow this down real quick, is, you know, as I was looking over my testimony and I'm listening to everybody else speak about what they have to offer, I couldn't help but think that my value in offering my testimony would come from the perspective of my experience as a campus veteran service officer with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and then working as Oregon State University's advisor after working as a campus VSO, and then now working as a training and development specialist for ODVA. In that you know, 7-year span that I've been doing those three different positions, I've gotten to see a lot of different things, how it works on campuses when you aren't working for the campus and then when you are. And then also looking at the training aspect. And what I'd like to offer, Representative Evans, is you asked two questions, and I think I can answer those questions. And like Lori, I'd like to address the original Senate Bill 143, because I think there was some answers to your questions in that Senate bill. And you asked a question, what can we do? And then you said, what formula do we use? And what we've heard today is we've heard a couple of things, and we've heard a couple of gaps that these veterans coordinators have on campus, the biggest one being finances and having the finances to stand up programs, to stand up resource centers, to hire coordinators and that type of thing. But I want to identify the second gap that Senate Bill 143 and Lori alluded to a little bit, identified and addressed and allowed for us to formalize a program. And that is, if you were to ask every single one of these coordinators behind me what type of veterans-related training, networking, or even voice at a high level that they have, and you were to ask them that question, majority of them would say it was research on my own, it was networking with somebody who knew the business, it was finding it outside of the campus somewhere, somehow, because I knew somebody. Mm-hmm. As an example, Andrew Holbert from Western Oregon University, you know, I talked to him about this a little bit yesterday in the last couple days. When he first started at Western Oregon University, one of the first things he did was reached out to me as he was applying for the position. And he said, Gus, I know you've done this job before. Tell me what I need to know. And I've had the honor of mentoring him through that job as he's called me and asked questions and that type of thing. And he's done a fabulous job, as we know. But one of the comments that he made to me is he said, gosh, I wish there was a formalized training program. There's a lot of things I just don't know about VA. And so what I want you to think about is, imagine, we all know what a veterans service officer is in the state of Oregon. We have one in every county. I want you to imagine for a minute hiring a veteran service officer, putting him in their office, and then telling them, go ahead and do the job without any kind of training. How far would they go? How successful would they be? Would there be gaps they'd miss? Would there be things that they'd miss? More likely than not, there would be. That is why Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs historically has said, if you are a VSO in a county, you need to come to us, and we need to come to you, and we need to provide training, and we need to help you get your accreditation to the federal VA. There is a formalized process to help them with their training and networking with each other, and just a variety of things to help them be successful. That model is already there, and we can use that model for our VA coordinators to help them be successful and network, and be able to, you know, when another coordinator comes on, know what they need to do and have a voice across the state and with each other. So that's my testimony in a nutshell, is that the two gaps are, as you've identified, the money, and the other gap is they need the training, they need the networking, and they need somebody supporting them in their role as they start. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So any questions? Okay, seeing no questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Elfring, Ms. Carpenter, do you have anything else to add, or have you?
I'm just available to ask or answer any other questions, sir.
Good. All right, we're going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 143. What I would invite three members of the committee to do, but only three, because any more would be close to a quorum.
Are we being volunteered?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Just like the military.
Indeed. The way the bill is written right now enables a study. And while I want that study to move forward, I would also like, in the meantime, to have a vehicle that we can actually flow some cash through to help the programs. What I would like the work group to try to come up with is some type of formula that ties both skin in the game and likely outcomes to at least the first year of some type of formulaic support, okay, in an amendment. The study would move forward, but also for this fiscal year, for this biennium, we would have some cash going out the door while we're being smart.
Buy in plus a way to finance it.
Yep. So Representative Esquivel has just volunteered. Thank you very much for leading that work group, sir. Appreciate that. Mr. Lively?
Did I miss a meeting?
Mr. Meek, which one would you like, which of you would like to be on this? To
make sure. I think they both should.
I think Bill Post should, because he's not here. He's
oh. We'll put Post on there. I also need a Democrat, just so it's bipartisan. We do everything bipartisan here.
Meek would love it.
I think Meek has just volunteered himself. Very good.
Just
very
a quick
good.
Question, Chair.
Lori, I'm going to also volunteer you, because, again, this is not to bypass 143, what Lori was working on, but it's actually to kickstart some of it to flow, because I know the budget this year is going to be a little bit harder, so I want to make sure we don't drop the ball. Yes, sir, Mr. Meek, question.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Chair. just wanted to know, maybe some of these lottery dollars, we get those, that might be small portion of those funds, you
the
think?
The goal is, if we are successful in working the budget packages that we've talked about, I built into the amount of money something that can go towards student vet centers, but I need something to hang it on. With outcomes. With outcomes. Okay? Measurable outcomes. So if you could report back by next Thursday, that'd be great. Meek. Nope. Meek, Post, and Representative Esquivel is going to be chairing that work group. Okay? So hopefully in a week we can have a plan and then perhaps put an amendment in to try to move it soon. Okay? For Senate Bill 992, I'd like to open up a work session on Senate Bill, correction, open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 992. This will be a very quick public hearing. Mr. Volk.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 992 designates the third Friday of every September Oregon POW/MIA Recognition Day. In 2015, the Oregon Legislative Assembly enacted House Bill 2892 to require display of the National League of Families POW/MIA flag that symbolizes the nation's concern and commitment.
Thank you all for coming.
To resolving, as far as possible, the fates of Americans still held prisoners or those who remain unaccounted for in Southeast Asia. Senate Bill 992 takes another step, designating the third Friday of each September Oregon POW/MIA Recognition Day. In the Senate, there were 30 ayes, no excused or absence. Fiscal was no expenditure, revenue, no revenue impact.
Okay. Ms. Woods, would you like to come forward? And before you begin,
yes.
I'm pretty certain I'm speaking for everybody when you're already leaning a yes. So,
yes, thank you.
I don't think you probably have to say a lot, but please.
No,
go ahead.
I don't have to say a lot. But thank you, Chair Evans and Vice Chair Esquivel and the members of the committee for allowing me to come before you. And I won't take much of your time, because you do have my testimony from when I testified in the Senate when they heard it. I just wanted to present another different additional aspect to it. Of course, we know of the emotional and physical toll of those who have survived being a prisoner of war. And it's certainly emotional and physical and financial for the families of those who are missing.
And this day was set as a remembrance so that they would know that their loved ones and the rest of us could also express our support for the cost that it took. I didn't realize that there were 1,741 people still missing or lost from the Vietnam War. And so that's a lot of families. I don't know the numbers of that, of you know, what percentage of that are Oregonians, but certainly some of them are. And when I testified on this bill in the Senate, and also at the same hearing was the bill for a recognition day for those who had earned Purple Hearts, and there was a question regarding that bill as to whether Oregon would be the first state to have their own personal day of recognition. And it turned out that the number was very few, like perhaps three other states had already set a state recognition day. So I wanted to find out if another state or how many states had have their own POW/MIA recognition day. And the only state that I could find who had done anything as on the state level was Alaska, and that was only last year. So you could be the first state to bring forth a state recognition day for our POW/MIA people and support their families. And I just wanted to encourage you to do that. So
thank you.
Thank you for coming today.
Any questions for the?
Yes, sir. I have a statement that we did a news commentary from the VA cemetery in Eagle Point, the National Cemetery, mm-hmm. and lo and behold, remember we had an individual here that didn't want to recognize the POW/MIA flag, but they fly that in the National Cemetery. So I think that pretty much answers what the United States position is on the POW/MIA flag.
Just one other aspect. When 9/11 happened and the Twin Tower attack happened, we lived in Rochester, New York, and I was a high school librarian. So, you know, when someone called with the news that a plane had flown into one of the towers, I didn't think that was possible because you can see the tower, and it couldn't have been an accident. So I got things up and running in the library. I was a high school librarian, and we could not leave the screen. It consumed us, and that was personal to us because that was so close and part of us. But out here, it's like ancient history or the other side of the world. To have an Oregon POW/MIA recognition day would bring it home to our neighbors and our friends who have been affected like this. And I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Going to close the public hearing. Like I said, want to work that when everybody can be here. Mm. So we'll be doing that next Thursday. All right. So just the way it works here is sometimes there's a public hearing, sometimes there's a work session. We have a quorum to move it today, but I want to make sure and give some folks an opportunity to be a yes as well. All right? So we're going to adjourn the meeting today.
Just next Tuesday we have
one. Next Tuesday we have no committee scheduled, but we are going to be no work at the committee, but we are going to be coming in and talking about work groups. So the goal is to meet quickly, and then if you have a work group that maybe you want to work together on, that would be a good time to do it.
All right.
Just saying.
The ones we volunteered for.
Exactly. There we go. Going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There we go. Going to adjourn the meeting.